was finally arrested in New Mexico. The House is expected to vote on the domestic violence bill tomorrow. Craig Windham, NPR News, Washington.
Retail sales barely rose last month, but a boost from unseasonably warm weather in March faded. The new report shows basic strength in demand, however, and business inventories are up, if only slightly. That points to higher factory production with the possibility of stronger economic growth. The news is helped pushing stock prices up slightly this morning. European stocks plunged today, and the value of the euro is down against other currencies. With Broadway tickets increasingly costly, New York City's Lincoln Center Theater opens a new stage featuring lower-cost tickets today. It will feature works by emerging playwrights, directors, and designers at prices far below what are common on Broadway. I'm Paul Brown, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Fox Searchlight Pictures, whose The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel from the director of Shakespeare in Love stars Judi Dench and Maggie Smith, now in select theaters.
The long-term future of public media in Central Illinois depends on the generosity of people like you who can make special gifts through their estate. Consider including WILL in your estate plan. Leave your own legacy and support what you love. Your attorney can help you put your wishes into proper form. For more information on the WILL Legacy Circle, call Don DeBeard at 217-333-7300.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. I'm also happy to have back here on the program once again Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign for, well, a long time now. He's been here at least a couple times a year to answer questions about car care. And if you have a problem and you need to get some advice, give us a call and tell us what kind of car it is and give us the best description that you can. And he will see if he can suggest a solution or at least something for you to look at to check out. And more general kinds of questions about maintenance, we talk about that kind of stuff too. You know, anything car related, you can give us a call and Rick will see if he can help you out. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Also, we have email if you want to send in your question that way. will-talk@illinois.edu. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
I was just thinking, you know, being as you were a car guy, it might be interesting just to note the passing of a very important car guy. Carroll Shelby passed away, and I don't know if that name will be familiar to people. Maybe if they're old enough, they'll remember the Shelby Mustangs.
Yes.
The big, when there was the golden age of muscle cars, they were one of the most muscliest American production cars, I think there were. And he was pretty famous for having been a racer and then having decided that he wanted to take on the big European names in racing like Ferrari and show that an American car, an American people could win and was really very successful by taking a small car and then putting in a great big V8, American V8 engine in there, and was very successful. Anything for what does Carroll Shelby mean to you?
Well, I think the Cobra is the big thing.
Yeah,
I fortunately get to see them every summer at the racetrack, and they are a pretty awesome car. And the people that have them are that's all they think about.
Yeah,
you know, they're just kind of like he was, just really into it.
And are these cars that still date from that time?
There are a few. There are a lot of replicas, kit-type cars out there now as well. And unless you really know what you're looking for, they look pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So what was it was it something in particular that he did engineering-wise that was special?
Well, I think he was a racer, and he obviously could design. And he put the two together, and it was a love of his. So obviously it made him successful because he wanted to be.
Yeah. Is there something really, say, if you have a Cobra and you set that next to a Ferrari, I mean, is there something that's really distinctly different about the Cobra?
Oh, I don't know. To me, it's always just been the sound.
Oh.
Just the appearance, the era that it was designed and the way it looks, it just was ahead of itself.
Yeah. Yeah. apparently the story was that he was where he was living before he really got into racing, that somebody he knew drove up one day to his house and was driving an MG. and he just started got attracted to the idea of a little car. But then he thought, well, I think we need to put a great big engine in that little car. And that's kind of what he did.
That's what he did.
All right. Well, anyway, we got a caller here in Champaign. We got others out there, I'm sure, with questions. You want to give us a call? 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. First caller, somebody in Champaign on line number 4. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 99 Mercury Sable, and it has about 100,000 miles on it right now. And I took it into the Ford dealership recently for an oil change. And, of course, they recommended a whole litany of flushes that I need to do. And I am myself not terribly knowledgeable. So I was calling to see which of these flushes are actually necessary versus not so much. And what they recommended was a power steering flush, a brake fluid flush, a coolant flush, and a transmission flush. So which of those are actually things that I should consider doing?
Well, brake fluid is hydroscopic, which means it absorbs moisture. Most manufacturers recommend flushing the brake system every 2 years. As far as coolant is concerned, is that the original coolant in the car?
As far as I know, I don't think we've replaced it since we got the car in 2004, and it only had 15,000 miles at that time.
Okay. Then I would probably do that. As far as the power steering, depending on the color of the fluid, it has a little cap, and on attached to the cap is a little dipstick, and you can check it yourself, and you can see the color of it. Okay. It should be fairly red in color. If it's black, it probably should be changed. And as far as the transmission, if it's never been serviced, that would definitely be something to do.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Yeah, I just was not sure. I was a little overwhelmed by
Right. Well, at 100,000, a lot of those things are recommended. If you look in your owner's manual and the maintenance schedule of the book, you'll probably see them listed there. You may not see power steering listed, but you will see the others.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right, thank you. Other questions? Give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You can also send an email if you want, will-talk@illinois.edu. Over the years, certainly we have talked over and over again, or certainly you have, about how important it is to pay attention to scheduled maintenance and to look at your owner's manual. Or if you don't have one, get one for the car that you have so that you see what the recommendations are about changing fluids and filters and, you know, the whole deal. And one thing I was thinking about is how now over time, as newer models have come out, that the manufacturers have lengthened the time between oil changes. And some now it seems like, you know, there was a time when it seemed like the general recommendation was, well, maybe every 3,000 or 4,000 miles. And now we have manufacturers that say, well, you can go 7,000 miles.
Some are at 10 and some are at 15.
Yeah. So how is it that we've managed to go with that astounding extension of oil life? Is it about the oil?
The oil, obviously. And most of the cars that have these longer intervals, as you refer to them, are using synthetic oils.
Oh, okay.
So the synthetic oils are designed to last longer. I think that's too long, personally. Particularly on some of these vehicles that BMWs that are lasting 15,000 intervals. What we're starting to see with those is that some of the components within the engine that control camshaft timing, in particular, referred to as vanos, the little particles of sediment that accumulate over time in an engine are constantly moving through the system. And some of the passageways in these valves and solenoids are so small that they're getting stuck in there.
Uh-huh.
And they're turning check engine lights on. They're causing them to run rough. And it's just too long. So 7,000, I think, is plenty.
It's good?
Yeah, 6 to 7.
Okay.
With the synthetics.
All right. Let's go to the phones here. We got some more folks. We'll go to Aurora for our next. Line 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
This is not my question, but the previous caller brought up on transmission fluid changes. I'd gone back and forth with different people. When I wanted to flush down when I had like 92,000 on my pickup, they said that, no, I should have the pan dropped and the filter change first type thing. And I never got that done. And then one guy said, then you've waited too long. And he says, you probably shouldn't change it now, because if you change it, you're going to lose some of the grit that's in there. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, generally, if you get over 100,000 miles on a car and you've never serviced the transmission, I will tell people up front that there's a possibility that after the service you may have transmission issues. Some of the synthetic fluids they're using in the transmissions, they turn those lifetime. But what you referred to, as far as flush is concerned, I've always felt that you should change the filter. In other words, drop the pan, like you mentioned, change the filter.
Okay. All right. The reason I called today is that a year ago next month, I put a new starter on my pickup. And as soon as I put this new starter on, I don't know what you want to call it, a little birdie or a tweet in there that fluctuates with RPMs. I was wondering if you've ever come across a problem like that.
You mean after the starter is operated or while the starter is operating?
No, it's when the pickup is running. So it's you hear it after the starter disengages. So, you know, it's kind of an electronic type of a birdie in there, so to speak. And as the RPMs rise, so does the sound. You know, it fluctuates with the RPMs.
So it's not okay. So after the starter has finished its job,
mm-hmm.
and retracted from the flywheel,
mm-hmm.
then the noise occurs.
Well, that's when I hear it, right? Because I mean, it's, you know, when you first start an engine, you know, there's plenty of noise. So you don't really you don't really notice it when it's cranking. It sounds like it's an electronic type of a tweet in there or a birdie in there, and like I say, it fluctuates with the RPMs. You know, the faster the RPMs, the faster this tweet is.
If you open the hood and just listen to it and accelerate the engine, you'll hear it then?
Well, you know, that's a good question. What I notice is when I'm driving it, you know.
Right.
You know, that's a good question on that part. I can't give you an honest answer.
Well, you might try that, and if you hear that noise, just pour some water on the belt, the serpentine belt.
Mm-hmm.
And see if the noise changes.
Hmm.
It may be associated with the belt. On those noises, you kind of identify where the source is, and then you just kind of start eliminating things.
Hmm.
And water is a real simple thing to just pour on the belt, because it doesn't hurt anything. But if it's related to the belt, the noise will go away.
So you don't think it's an electrical type thing, then, huh?
Well, without hearing it, at first I thought you were talking about after the starter spins, you hear that noise.
I don't think it has anything to do with the starter, but it just so happened, though, that it started as soon as I changed that starter, you know, put a new starter on it, then it started this, so. Okay.
All right,
thank you.
All right,
very good. Thank you. We will continue. The next caller we have in line is someone in Urbana, and line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I have a 10-year-old Honda CR-V with 240,000 miles on it, and each time we get the oil changed, the shop tries to sell us up to some sort of an oil for high-mileage vehicles. What's your thought on that? Should I just continue using the conventional oil recommended?
I would definitely use the high-mileage oil.
We should, okay.
Yes. Yeah, Valvoline makes a product. You know, there's lots of them out there.
Okay. And can you say anything about the ingredients in this? Is it a synthetic oil, or is there just some additives put into it?
Just the additives that are in it. There's additives in there in terms of oil consumption, help with sealing of seals to try to keep them pliable, and it definitely works. We've used it a lot of times on cars that were burning oil and switched to the high mileage oil, and it's decreased that consumption.
And, you know, what's your definition of high mileage? We're accustomed to thinking of a 100,000-mile vehicle is still new, and 200,000 is well worn in. When would you suggest switching to the high mileage oil?
Generally, we only do that when there's a consumption problem.
Okay. We are getting a bit of consumption.
Yes.
So we do tend to put in a quart between oil changes.
Right. So I would definitely switch to it.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
All right. Very good. And over to Belgium, line number 3. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I know I've brought this topic up with you and Mr. Inge before, but why can't we in the United States have a small diesel engine and a small pickup? Today, there are no more small pickups. You can't buy a Ranger brand new. I'm sure you can buy one used. You go to other countries, they have a lot of small pickup trucks, you know, what I'm saying, along the Ranger size, and they have small diesel engines in them, and they seem to get excellent gas mileage. And another aspect, I have heard that in Eastern Europe, they buy automobiles there that use a small diesel engine that gets extremely high mileage, and they're not at all available in the United States. Why can't we be involved with that?
A lot of the diesel issues are emissions related.
Well, can't we find some way to solve some of those diesel problems, engine problems? We've been at it for quite a while.
No, that's true. Yeah. I don't really know. Diesels have kind of lost popularity, as you know, from a consumer standpoint.
Well, I take exception with that, sir, in that we're only offered certain size trucks, so that's all we can buy. I mean, we can't. I would love to buy another small pickup truck. I start off with several Datsuns, and now I have a small Ranger, and it's about to quit on me, and I can't find a new small vehicle because I don't need one of those big ones. But they don't even offer anything like that.
No, they don't. And Toyota went away from it several years ago.
Yeah.
And they had a nice little truck.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's just the way life's going to be, isn't it?
Unfortunately, it seems that way.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. I think, isn't it also maybe one of the issues with diesel is that while I think now we have better designs for diesel engines, they still have the reputation of being kind of smelly and kind of noisy, and that's a lot of people have in their minds the idea, well, that's just what diesel is. And that even though now we have better ones, people just haven't they don't know that. They're still thinking about, well, what diesels used to be like.
Yeah, I think that's true. And then look at the price of diesel fuel versus gasoline. What's the incentive?
Yeah. There would have been a time when there was an incentive, but then at some point that changed, and I'm not sure why that changed, but it did.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with the process, but I thought it was explained to me at one time that in the process, diesel fuel is less refined than gasoline. In other words, it's actually cheaper to make. Maybe that's not true anymore.
Uh-huh.
But you're right. The odor, the noise, and then when they first came out, there was problems where they didn't start in the winter when it got cold, unless you plugged them in. And then before that, you had to use fuel number 1, which was thinner in the winter, or you had to put kerosene in it. So there were just a lot of those things that in the beginning made it very difficult for a good future.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go on again. We'll talk to somebody in Rockford. Line number 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
Look, I've got a 2001 Hyundai Accent, and it's well, 12 or 13 years old. I've never had a car that old. Basically, they put in a different motor. The body's got about 99,000 miles. I got one question, about, or a couple questions. The automatic transmission, they told me to drive it in overdrive, which I have, and it's been getting good gas mileage, so that was the main impetus there. Am I correct to be doing that, keeping the thing in overdrive?
Yes, there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay, all right. Secondly, I got in the mail from the owner. I've had the thing for about 9, almost 10 months, and our records indicate the following services should be performed at this time. Transmission, left axle boot torn. Obviously, they only saw the car 3 months ago when they changed the oil, and I think they put in something on the front tie rod or something. Is that a real thing, left axle boot torn?
Yeah, that's a constant velocity joint.
I'm not a mechanic.
I understand. It's part of the drive axle on the front of the vehicle. There's four of those boots on the front, two outers and two inners. And when a boot gets torn, what it's designed to do is retain the grease or the lubricant inside the joint and, of course, prevent water and dirt from entering. So if the boot is torn and the axle's not making noise, it should be replaced. Now, you might inquire when they give you an estimate for the boot that they give you an estimate to replace the entire axle with a new one because it will have a lifetime warranty. So you'll only be responsible for the labor to change it as opposed to paying for another axle. So I would inquire about that.
For a new one, because that will be lifetime.
Correct.
Now, why would they put transmission on that?
Transmission service?
No, it just says transmission in capital letters, then two dots, left axle boot torn. Does that mean that there's two things, transmission and left axle?
My guess is they're talking about a transmission service, changing the fluid.
Okay, what would you think?
Yes.
The car's got 99,000 miles. The engine, they said, has only got about 19,000.
Right.
But that's right. The transmission is not the engine. What am I doing?
Right. Okay. Yeah, so, I would do the service.
Okay, and so for 100,000, but it's 99,000, 100,000, what do we do on those transmissions? I was listening to your last caller, and you were saying about filter and everything else.
Some of them have a filter, and some do not. Some are just
Hyundai.
Right. Some are just simply drain and fill.
Okay, so I wouldn't know, but all right. But so what? Just tell them service the transmission, or is there something more specific?
No, that's correct.
Okay, and then estimate for the entire axle. Okay, and then there's a couple rust spots. Touch them up. That's about all. Do you know any? Is that about all I should think of for a 12, 13 year old car?
Well, as long as you're up to date on all the other services and fluids.
Okay, because we paid extra for an owner's manual they somehow got. What didn't come with so we got the service things and all that.
Right. You can always find that information online.
Oh, okay.
You could actually just print it out if you don't have it.
Okay, well, maybe it was worth it, but I paid $20 or something for it. Mm-hmm.
Well, the book should have... Does it have the maintenance schedule in the book?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then that's what you need to look at and see where you are in terms of prior servicing and what it takes to get everything up to date.
Okay. All right. So service tranny, like they said. Now, and then for the axle boot torn, the entire axle should be replaced.
Well, ask for an estimate both ways.
Okay.
And then you can make the decision. But I'm mentioning it because... of the lifetime warranty that you would get.
For the new one, yeah.
Correct.
Okay, because hopefully that thing should last me at least 5 more years.
Right.
Look, I appreciate your assistance.
Oh, no problem.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye.
Other questions are welcome. We're talking this morning with Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He's generally here at least a couple times a year, and we do the show where we say, okay, you got a problem, you give us a call, and you can talk about it with Rick. Just tell us what kind of car you have and what the problem is, and we'll see if we can help you out. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Now, I don't want to confuse people here about the transmission service issue, but I know, because we've talked about this before, that you have said if you have a car that's got a lot of miles on it and the transmission has never been serviced—
that the issue is that particles, stuff, will be in that, in the fluid, in the transmission, and that there's always a chance that in the process of changing it, that something that's going to shake loose and that's going to end up being a problem for the transmission. So, I mean, how do you think about that if, in fact, you've never done it?
Well, that's why I mentioned earlier that when you're over 100,000 miles and you've never done anything like that, that we always try to explain that up front. It's not like saying 80% of the time it'll be okay and 20% it won't. I don't know that there's any numbers like that. Okay. It's just a possibility, and the customer needs to be made aware of that.
Well, so what could happen? Maybe that's the question.
Typically what happens is the transmission starts slipping. In other words, the engine revs up, but the car doesn't go.
Uh-huh. And is that because the gears, the teeth in the gears, something gets in there and they don't mesh like they're supposed to?
Well, it's kind of like I was mentioning earlier about these extended oil intervals where these little particles get stuck in a solenoid or a valve and create a problem with the valve operation, or it may stick, or it may get under a little check ball and the ball won't seat. Those things can happen, but not common.
Okay. But if that did happen, then would you end up having to rebuild, having to take it apart? And
replace it, usually.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's go back over here and talk with some more folks. Somebody here, local, in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I have an 07 Chevy HHR, and it's got 100,000 miles on it, a commute. I have this recurring problem with when I brake. There's a lot of shaking and maybe even rattling sound in the steering wheel, like the shaft of the steering wheel. Sometimes it goes away after I have an oil change, like it dims, but it always returns. And it mostly when I'm braking is when I hear it.
You hear it, or the steering wheel goes left and right?
It doesn't go left and right. It just kind of shakes. Yes, I guess that's left and right.
Okay. It needs front brake rotors.
Ah.
And does it happen? Yeah, there's...
I've gone through that a few times already, yep.
That's what needs to be checked is the brake rotors.
Okay. That was a simple answer to my question. My husband just keeps thinking it's an oil change, so I'll go check it out again.
Okay.
All right. Very good. Bye-bye. I'll go on here to another caller here. We'll go over to Indiana, line four. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I have a question about oil pressure. I purchased a used 010 GMC crew cab with a 5.3 engine. And after having the vehicle, and I've put it, I had 19,000 when I got it. I've got 29 now, and I've noticed an oil pressure drop. When I'm in overdrive in the automatic transmission, my oil pressure will drop down to about 30 pounds. And when I pull up to a stop, the oil pressure will drop to 20 pounds. Now, I'm thinking this isn't right, and I've been back to my dealer several times. They're now going to change the oil pressure sending unit. Haven't had that done yet, but they're telling me there's nothing wrong with the vehicle. They're just doing this as a convenience to me. I was wondering what you thought. They did tell me that I can run as low as 6 pound oil pressure without any engine damage.
So you don't know what the actual spec is at idle then?
No. When they tested, they put a
mechanical gauge on
and said that the oil pressure was okay, but they didn't tell me what it read.
I see. Well, it would have been nice to know what it read. That way you would know if the sending unit is, in fact, bad.
Yes. Well, like I say, they're going to change the sending unit, but they don't think that's there's anything wrong with the motor with the oil pressure. I've talked to several other people that have basically the same pickup, same engine, and their oil pressure never drops below 40 pounds. So I'm just concerned my warranty is going to run out, and the engine, something will happen to the engine, and they're all set with the problem.
Well, I think you need to go back to the original test procedure and duplicate that again before the sending unit gets replaced so that they can duplicate a hot idle, and you said it was 20 PSI?
Yes.
Okay. So unless they can provide that information, it would be comforting to you, I believe, to have that number.
Okay.
Otherwise...
So I should request them to do that pressure test again and then tell me what's reading.
That's what I would do. That way you'll know if the sending unit is the problem. Right now, they're just going to put it in and see what happens, it sounds like.
Yeah, basically I think that's what they're going to do.
Right.
I guess I was just wanting your thought on whether the 6 pound of idle pressure is correct.
Well, that probably is, without looking it up. But usually by the time the oil light comes on, it's too late anyhow.
Yeah, that's kind of what's worrying me.
Right.
But I traded a pickup with 130,000 mile off that had better oil pressure than what this newer one's running, so that's kind of concerning me.
And we are using the right oil, is the 530?
Yes. They're using the 530.
Okay.
Personally, I actually use 1030 in my vehicles, but because of their free oil changes, that's what they're using.
Okay. Well, I would think the best thing to do is get the numbers, and then that way you'll know for sure.
All righty.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. We're talking this morning in this hour of Focus with Rick Karch. He's an auto mechanic. His business is Rick's Automotive in Champaign, and he is occasionally here on the show. And we talk about cars and car care. We'll talk some more in just a moment after a short break. This is Focus.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Trophy Time in Champaign. Trophy Time features a variety of advertising items, name badges, plaques, and trophies. They can also design and create unique awards for any occasion. Trophy Time, they're more than just trophies. More information is on their new website, trophytime.com.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We are here Monday through Friday from 10 until noon, and we have 10 different topics every week. Try to mix it up so there'll be, I hope, at least a few shows each week that will interest you. In the second hour today, the guest is Denise Cummins. She is adjunct professor of psychology and philosophy at the U of I, and we will be talking about her book, Good Thinking, 7 Powerful Ideas That Influence the Way We Think. And they're different ideas. They come from different academic disciplines, and she says it would be a good thing for all of us to be familiar with them. Tomorrow morning, we'll talk about the growing problem of student loan debt in this country and why it's a problem and what we might do about it. Lauren Asher will be the guest. She is president of the Institute for College Access and Success. And then also tomorrow on the 11 o'clock hour, we'll be talking about the emotion of disgust, what it is, where it came from, how it influences our behavior. Our guest there will be Rachel Hertz. She is a professor of psychiatry and human behavior at Brown University and has authored a book that's out recently. The title of her book is That's Disgusting, Unraveling the Mysteries of Repulsion. You can get the schedule for the rest of the week and next week by going to the website. You can also listen to past programs that way. It's WILL.illinois.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter at Will Public Media, and you can check us out on Facebook. This morning, this hour of the show, we're taking questions on car care. Rick Karch is here, and you can call us 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's some other folks for us to talk with. And next, Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I was curious, how much difference is there between a conventional gasoline engine and an LP burning engine?
Well, it's been a long time since I worked with one of those, but if I remember right, years ago, this would have been 15, 20 years ago, was the last time I saw one of those. There really wasn't a lot of difference as far as the cylinder heads were still the same. I mean, nothing had been changed back then. I don't know how things are today. What have you learned?
I haven't. It's just that it looks like there may be a move toward LP fuel. It's so much more economical, and I was wondering how much difference there'd be in manufacturing costs and whether they'd be convertible. As I recall, the old tractors, it was simply a matter of changing the fuel injection systems. Of course, in those days, they had carburetors on the gasoline engines.
If I remember correctly, didn't, like I said, it's been a long time. If I remember correctly, didn't they start on the gas and then switch?
I don't think so. Some of the diesel, early diesel engines did. And they were interesting contraptions. They'd let out a huge burst of smoke. In fact, we had people stop a couple of times and ask if the machine shed was on fire. But I really never had any experience with it. But it, several of the truck lines apparently are very interested in switching over to LP, and there's a move to put fueling stations every 100 or 200 miles along some of the superhighways. So I was wondering if you knew anything about that.
No, unfortunately, I don't.
Well, it looks as though maybe, possibly in the future, you'll be working on them again.
Yes.
Thanks for what information you did.
Okay, sure. Well, thank you. We'll go on here, and another caller to talk with in Champaign. This is line number 3. Hello.
Morning.
Yes, hi.
I've got a kind of an obsession with the idea of a vehicle with an electric oil pump instead of mechanical. Just the simplicity of being able to pre-lube the engine before it turns over. Are there any vehicles made with an electric oil pump?
I'm not sure if there are. I know there's a lot of cars that have water pumps that are electric, power steering, but I don't recall anything about oil pump being electric.
I've seen supplemental, but I just thought if that was the only one, you could just simply turn the ignition key to the on position and wait till the oil light goes off and then turn it over, and you'd have pre-lube bearings. So I didn't know if any manufacturers actually implemented that idea.
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, okay, just a thought. Thank you.
Right. Okay, other questions? Give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And we have email, so if you'd like to send a question or comment that way, you can certainly do it. Will-talk at illinois.edu. I was going to ask you about care of auto finishes. And, well, first of all, I was thinking about how if, you know, now when you go to buy a car, you just don't pay your money and drive off. What the dealership would like to do is sell you various things in addition. And the and among the things that they might like to sell you would be some additional protective coating on the outside of the car and then rust proofing too. But let's just talk about the what you might do to protect the finish on the car. First of all, do you think it's worth, if you have a new car, paying some extra money to have something put on that that's going to protect it?
No, I don't.
No, okay.
It's a lot of those. Rust proofing is an interesting question because if most of those pay for rust that occurs from the inside out, not from the outside in. In other words, from a door ding, they won't pay for that. So you have to read the contracts on some of these extended rust proofing. And the other thing a lot of manufacturers provide is upwards of 7-year protection for rust because of the panels that they're using. So in some cases, you may have a duplicate. You're paying for something that you really aren't going to use or be able to take advantage of because the manufacturer already has provided it for you. So a lot of those things they try to sell you when you buy a new car, you need to research them and think about them. Some of these extended warranties is another good example and what they actually cover. And some of them, they all have deductibles. I've seen some that have deductibles per incident. And so if you have 4 things that you're complaining about or want checked out, you pay a deductible every one of those. So a lot of these extended warranties, and some of them I've seen, they're over $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
Some are based on a percentage of the price, particularly a used car, they'll do it that way. So that's definitely something to research.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of finish protection, in addition to just keeping the car clean, do you think that it's a good idea to wax it?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
So what does waxing do, other than make it look nice and shiny?
Well, it obviously provides a protectant to the paint. It's less likely to water spot. It's protecting the paint, oxidation in particular, discoloration. So waxing is a very good thing to do. And then if you wash your own car, particularly in the winter, if you go to one of the car wash places with the wand, you want to make sure you spray inside the fender wells and get the rust out of the inside of the fender wells and under the chassis as much as you can. If you go to one of those drive-through ones, it's always a good idea to pay the little extra where it sprays from the bottom, so it sprays the undercarriage of the car as well. And generally you want cleaning to be done in areas, particularly fender wells, water stands for an extended period of time. That's where rusting occurs.
Right.
Sometimes people put fender well liners on and they'll attach them with screws. And after they drill the hole, if they don't put a sealant in that hole, there's bare metal, and then they'll start to rust. So sometimes you'll look at a car and you'll see, you can pretty well tell where every screw is that's holding on that liner.
Yeah.
Because
there's rust there.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's take another call here. Muhammad, line number one. Hello.
Hello. I have a Prius, and I have a little, a problem with driving in the different gears. Now, it has a RND on the left-hand side of the indicator that tells what gear I'm in. And then on the right-hand side, it has a P and a B. Now, the B is, I understand, for slowing down the car without using the brake. And it does work when I just shift down into that. When I'm coming off a highway, the car slows down until I push it back into drive. Is this hurting the engine?
No, it's not at all. It's just, it depends on the driving characteristics, but obviously it's easier on the brakes, for one thing.
That's what I figure, and
right.
It doesn't cause pressure to back up into the engine?
No, it's not damaging the engine.
Well, okay, I guess I'll continue to do that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, again, questions 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the ways that cars will really show their age, it seems to me, at least cosmetically, is that over time, the plastic pieces that fit over the headlights get cloudy. And it's oxidation, mm-hmm. I think is basically what that is. If you have a car that's like that, there are aftermarket products you can go on and you can clean that off. Is there anything that you could do to prevent that from happening, or is that just sort of natural consequence of age on the car?
Wax.
Oh, so if you're going to wax your car, you can put some wax on that too.
Right.
Okay.
But yeah, basically it's the kits are ultra-fine sandpaper, wet-dry sandpaper, and then there's a polishing compound in there, and then they do provide a sealant.
Oh, uh-huh.
Okay. After you're finished. And depending on how bad they are, sometimes it's worth it. My suggestion is that on some cars, you can buy that lens separate. And on some cars, it's only like $30 or $40. Well, to me, that's a cheaper route than spending an hour plus buying the kit
yeah.
to just replace it. So if You should check into what the cost is for the lens, if it's available separately. Some you have to buy the whole headlight assembly, and then, of course, it's...
Yeah, it's it can be... I guess my understanding was that it could be actually pretty expensive.
It can. Yeah.
But I suppose it varies from model to model.
Yes, it does.
Okay. And so the question is, what you want to know is just that clear plastic piece is what we're talking about. Can
Correct.
I just get one of those rather than...
The whole headlight.
The whole headlight.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. And does that, if when you do get to the point where they get really cloudy like that, does that reduce the effectiveness of your headlights?
Oh, yes.
It does?
Definitely. Yeah. And the kits aren't that expensive. And if, like I said, if you've got the time to do it, and just make sure you're careful and you mask off the perimeter of the painted surfaces areas.
Because it will scratch the paint?
If you don't want to scratch the paint, right.
Okay. Kankakee, here's our next caller, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi.
I'm riding along here on a tractor, as you can probably hear the noise. Very surprised that the question of ethanol hasn't come up. Just took a fast trip to a graduation over the weekend again, and I own a couple cars now, three vehicles actually, pick up two, for that heavy 85 engine. Very hard to find. What's the reasoning and what's going on there? Why are there so many E85 vehicles on the road, and yet the fuel is not available very often? And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. I don't know. Do you have an answer for that question? Why you can't drive up to every service station and buy E85? You can't.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how they decide which stations and locations to place that. I don't know if they just maybe keep them near the interstate. I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to talk to one of the oil refinery companies to figure out how they make that decision.
Now, is it a case that these cars, that if your only option is to buy, I think now most gasoline has 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Ethanol.
Correct.
If that's your only option, is that okay in an E85 car?
Yes, it has the ability.
Okay. Okay. So if you can get the E85, great. If not, conventional fuel will work.
That's really the only option you have then.
Yeah.
So
what about, you know, I may be getting into some controversial territory here, but I think that there are some people who would like to see that the mandate for ethanol content raised to, say, maybe like 15, and maybe they're even thinking about higher. And there's some concern about, well, what's that going to do to a conventional engine? Apparently, the manufacturers have decided that 10% ethanol in the fuel is fine. It's not going to cause a problem. If you go higher than that, is it likely to cause a problem, do you think?
In some cases with gaskets and seals, because obviously the alcohol is going to dry them. So that's the products that are in the engines today, that's what they've determined is acceptable without additional cost and repairs. And that's the 85 obviously is designed to deal with that higher percentage.
So that's the issue, that it gets at the seals. They're not up to that higher level of alcohol in the fuel.
I don't. Yeah, that's the primary one that I'm aware of. As far as any others, I'm not.
Okay. So if you also, though, it sounds as if you had to at one time, you know, if you had to put that in your tank, that's not going to, your car's not going to quit on you. It's just that you wouldn't want to use that on an extended basis.
I
suppose definitely if your car wasn't ready for E85, you wouldn't want to put that
in.
That's
correct.
But I'm thinking anything that's over 10% ethanol. Maybe there isn't any other than the 85. Isn't anything that's over 10%. Right, that's over the 10% now.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, let's go at least at one more. Urbana, this is line number 1. Hello.
There's another catch to the E85.
Uh-huh.
It has, 15% less power? So at $3 gas, you'd need a 45-cent differential before you'd break even. And at $4, you'd need, 60 cents? So you have to do a little math to find out whether it's worth buying it.
Do you have an E85 vehicle? Or?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay.
And mechanics have told me it's better not to use it anyway because it probably will still be detrimental to the rubber parts.
Mm-hmm. So your experience, though, is that your mileage is lower?
Well, it would be.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone who's written on the subject says that. It hasn't the power that pure gas has because the alcohol has less energy. I mean, that's not a question. Mm-hmm. That's a known fact. Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking personally, I certainly have had the experience of being traveling and being in a place where you could buy gasoline that doesn't have any ethanol. And I definitely, on the cars that I've had, have noticed the improved mileage when you get the chance to buy a premium gasoline that doesn't have any ethanol. So I guess I could say that, yeah.
The other thing is there isn't the saving in carbon contamination that it would be early claims were, because in part you have to use so much gasoline to produce the ethanol. There's a slight gain, apparently, and some studies have shown a larger gain, but it's rather questionable until fuel sources such as switchgrass and miscanthus are in use, and they're coming online. But you still have the problem with detrimental impact on the automobile's fuel system,
mm-hmm.
although it's not nearly so bad as it is with the older cars.
Okay, very good. I don't know if, Rick, you want to add anything now?
No, thank you.
Okay, we'll do one more call at least. Let's go to Sullivan, line 4. Hello.
Yes, I have burned up 2 truck engines because the fuel also, the alcohol messes up the power valves and whatever, and the carburetor. Is there any additive that you can add to this ethanol fuel that will alleviate this problem?
You've burned up 2 engines because you've used ethanol?
Yeah, it floods the engines and the excess fuel burns up the motor. You know, $3,000 a whack.
What did it? What year is the car and what did it damage?
It's a 1979 truck. Grain truck.
Yes, oh, okay.
Holly carburetor.
And the technicians in the shop attributed the engine damage to ethanol
That's
use.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
But you don't remember what they specifically said was damaged?
Well, the power valve in the carburetor was, you know, it floods the carburetor and the excess fuel runs down the cylinder wall, shall we say, and, the scores the motor locks up.
Oh, so the diaphragm and the carburetor
deteriorates. The carburetor is not set up for this ethanol fuel, and you cannot buy a Holley carburetor for this 429 engine. I was wondering if there was an additive that you can put in this ethanol fuel that will help boost the octane or do something to prevent this problem.
Not that I'm aware of. My understanding, all the carburetor kits that you buy now are acceptable with ethanol.
Okay. That's
so
I didn't know.
Yeah. So maybe that needs to be researched. So it's hydrolocking is what's happening. Mm-hmm.
I'm really sorry. I'm going to have to jump in here because we're really at the end of the time. I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it right there. My apologies to the caller. We can't do better, but we got to stop so I can make way for the market update. Hey, thanks very much.
Sure. Thank you.
Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
Next, an update on the market. Stay tuned.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the marketplace. We're on the screen, mostly in green at this hour. Let's look at particulars in Kansas City. July wheat at 6.25 and 3/4, up 11 and a quarter. December, 6.65, up 10. July wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade at 6.10 and a half, up 12 and a quarter. December, 6.46 and 3/4, up 11 and a half. July corn, 5.92 and 3/4, up 9 and 3/4. September, 5.21 and a half, up 8. December, 5.14 and a half, up 9. Go out to May of 13, a